audience was exceedingly respectful. It was patient. I went on at some length. And so, as a rule, I like to give the first three questions to dissenters. If anybody, everyone was respectful here, so those who want to register a strong disagreement or dissent from what I have to say, I think they should have the right to go first.
So I disagree because I don't think Israel won this war. I don't think it was a victory for Israel. So that's the disagreement. I also think that organization that Mr. Finkelstein talked about lacked among North American academics. From Mr. Chomsky all the way to Judith Butler, all the way down to professors in UBC, they failed to come together. I don't have their emails. You guys share your email list. They failed to come together like the academics in England, who finally, after 3 weeks, were able to put a beautiful letter together with hundreds of signatories. I called ZNet. I called all these institutions. I left messages to all these professors. Why aren't you guys organized? We're ready to organize too, and we're doing our best, but I think we lack that North American academic coming together in a big list of, like, very basic stuff and create support. Thank you.
Well, I'm not an academic anymore, thank goodness. I'm not sure if I ever was. I understand that there are people coming together to make a statement on this. Professors are coming together to make a statement on the subject. But, you know, we shouldn't get too carried away with professors. Most of them are windbags. We all know that. I want to be careful. I don't include the natural science, not natural sciences. They're smart. We also know that. I'm talking about those so-called social sciences, which are all stupid, and we all know that. But, you know, it's our responsibility, too. And it's our main responsibility. I don't know how many professors there are in this room, but there are a lot of people in the room. And we have to get organized.
I first want to convince Rita to obtain demand for his brief stance and for this visit that he made over here to help lift the fog over the eyes of many people about the misconception about the Palestinian cause and the reality of the Israeli government. But there's a couple of quick points, sir, that regarding the main goal of why Israel went to Gaza, I agree 100% about the two things that you mentioned, but I do believe, as a Muslim, Arab from Egypt, that the main goal for Israel to enter Gaza was to crush an Islamic government, because this war is a continuation of the war on terror, which George W. Bush actually called for in 2001, and the state of Israel is rallying and is known to be an ally to the U.S. government. So basically, the second point that I want to make here also very quick is that the reason why there's a war on an Islamic government is because the world's now becoming to understand really what Islam is all about. The world is turning to Islam. The world's finding out that Islam is a peaceful religion and it has a solution to the world's problem. And that's what makes Israel and America in fear, because Islam stands against tyranny, against treachery, against robbing people out of their own resources, against turning them into slaves to hold a bank, and so on and so forth, and that's the biggest fear to this government. Thank you very much.
The problem is there's no evidence to support that claim. Allow me to finish, please. Probably the most insightful speeches that were delivered during the massacre in Gaza were the ones on a nightly basis by the Secretary General of the Hezbollah, Nasrallah. He was giving nightly speeches to commemorate Ashura. And it's worth it. It's worth everybody's time, I think, to listen to what he had to say. And he was very emphatic day in and day out on two points. He said, number one, this is not an Israeli war, he said. It's an American war. It's all about the American goal of trying to dominate the Middle East. And number two, he kept saying, it has nothing whatsoever to do with Islam. The U.S. doesn't care if you're Islamic, Christian, Buddhist, atheist, whateverist. They only care about one thing, whether you're willing to follow orders. If you're willing to follow orders, they like you, and if you're unwilling, they don't like you. That's the only criterion. Let's look at another example. They claim Ahmadinejad. He's so terrible, he's a Holocaust denier. What could be worse than that? Well, there happens to be another very famous Holocaust denier in the Middle East. This person actually wrote his doctoral dissertation denying the Nazi Holocaust. This person then was so pleased with his doctoral dissertation denying the Holocaust, he self-published it in Lebanon. And who is this person? His name is Dr. Mahmoud Abbas. Yes, America's favorite, the head of the so-called Palestinian so-called authority. He's also a great intellectual. He got his doctorate denying the Nazi Holocaust. Does Israel care? Does the United States care? Of course not. Some of you don't understand why, because you haven't seen The Wizard of Oz. If you've seen The Wizard of Oz, you'll know that there are good witches and bad witches. The good witch is the beautiful Glinda. And the bad witch, I forget her name all the time. And it's the same thing with Holocaust deniers. There are good Holocaust deniers like Mr. Abbas or Dr. Abbas, and there are bad ones like Mr. Ahmadinejad. That's the same. There are good Muslims like the heads of Saudi Arabia. There are good Muslims. And then there are bad Muslims. Muslims like Mr. Nasrallah. He's an evil Muslim because he has this weird idea that it's the Arab people and Muslim people who should control the destiny of the Muslim and Arab world. A very weird idea. He's obviously evil.
Thank you, Dr. Finkelstein, for your insightful talk. I'm a dissenter, but a dissenter against the Canadian government and media, not against what you've been saying. So I don't know if that counts, but I'm glad you brought up the Canadian media. My name's Gordon Murray. I'm one of the creators of a parody edition of the Vancouver Sun, which satirized its pro-Israeli, anti-Palestinian bias. We put it out a year and a half ago, and we're now being sued by CanWest, which is Canada's largest media conglomerate, for putting out this parody. So I'm really interested in your comments on the media. I just wanted to tell people that if they want to find out more about this case, which is a significant attack on freedom of expression for all Canadians, that they can go to the seriouslyfreespeech.ca website, and we have a forum coming up in February 17th at Harbour Centre. There's flyers for it outside. So that's the end of the ad. I just wanted to ask you, Dr. Finkelstein, as far as strategies in dealing with the media, here in Canada, as you pointed out, it's horrific. The Vancouver Sun, on the day after Israel shelled the two UN schools and killed 42 civilians, the Vancouver Sun carried the story on page B6 with no header anywhere else in the paper, and the headline was "Pressure Grows for Ceasefire." That's what we're up against in terms of public education in Canada, getting the word out about what's actually happening. So I appreciate your recommendation that people organize and tell the truth, but I wonder if you have any specific recommendations on how to deal with the media beyond doing parody editions as we did, or writing letters to the editor, which there is very little effect. And I was wondering if you have an idea of, or a personal opinion on how the media works. Is it an elite consensus that keeps the news so homogenized, or what kind of strategies are at play there?
I don't believe that any longer the mainstream media pose a major obstacle to us knowing the truth. There was a time when it was very difficult to find things out if the major media effectively colluded to obscure or falsify the truth. But nowadays, it just doesn't seem that people are any longer so dependent on the Globe and Mail, the New York Times, and those other forms of those other mainstream media. I follow these topics quite closely, and it's very striking to me. I probably get in any given day between 100 and 300 emails just of people sending me information. And it's very striking how little articles from the Times, the Globe and Mail, and so forth actually are circulated among people on the web. That's one of the reasons why, you know, the Times is in serious financial help. And speaking as a resolute atheist, with God's help, hopefully it will go broke. I think that people have now managed to find ways to keep themselves reasonably well informed about what's going on. What the media is doing is shameful, that's for sure. It's wretched beyond words, that's for sure. But I don't think it any longer poses an insurmountable obstacle to knowing the truth. So I'm not so concerned about it anymore. Of course, you would like them to acknowledge what's happening, but if they want to go their merry way, let them, because they're becoming, I think, in many respects, largely irrelevant.